Blog Talk Radio.
This is Getting It Done with your host, Dr. Dean. This week on Getting It Done, we have two different forms of activities that are going to take place. The first, we are going to listen and receive information about one of the oldest creative instruments known to mankind, and that's the drum. The drum goes back so far, it was used by so many means in the past. But when did it get started with jazz? We're going to find that out. And then after that, we're going to listen to some songs from the album called Kind of Blue. It was done by the great Miles Davis. When I say great, I mean the greatest Miles Davis, who, in fact, actually got everything started with cool jazz. He is one of the beboppers, played bop with Charlie Parker, but somewhere along the way, he found a different way to go. And so without any further ado, let's start off with the drums and so we can use this time wisely and getting us to know more about where the drums actually are. Who were the people that were playing the drums that got us started in jazz? And let's see how far we can go back and deal with that. Let's listen. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you who those particular people who were singing, but I will tell you after we finish listening to this segment. If we can get it to play.
Drummers that have ever played this instrument. We're going to be doing that by looking at specific genres. And we're starting with the 20 greatest jazz drummers. This is a new series, and I am really excited about this because to know our instrument better, to know music better, we have to know the history of it. Not only the instrument, but the history of the players as well. And there's no better place to start than the history of jazz drumming. Why? Because the drum set literally came about through the art form of jazz. So let's look at the 20 greatest jazz drummers. Now, I want to clarify. You all know, I don't like pitting one drummer against another. I think that's an impossible thing to do. You really can't compare art like you can a baseball card. You really have to look at it as art. So I don't want to do that. But what I want to do is use the criteria of who had the most influence, who were the innovators, who helped create the modern drum kit, who helped create the modern sound that we have. So that's the lens we're looking through. We're not looking through who were just the fastest, who were the most impressive. That really has nothing to do with this. This is who were the greatest drummers and others who made the biggest contribution to this art form. Jazz is something near and dear to my heart. It's actually what I have my degree in, even though I don't get to play it much these days. I've got a degree in jazz studies for whatever that paper's worth. And so many of these players, I spent a long, long time studying both their playing as well as the history of them on the instrument. I'm well aware that some of you may disagree with me, and that's totally fine. Greatest lists are totally subjective. So put your favorites down in the comments. These are my 20 picks for the greatest jazz drummers that had the greatest influence on this art form and on this instrument. Instead of listing these in order of like the most innovative, I'm going to be listing them more chronologically. This isn't perfect chronological order. Some of these overlap. Some came just slightly before, slightly after. But I'm doing my best to give you a timeline of what happened within the innovation of drumming, the drum set, and the art form of jazz. We'll start in no other place than New Orleans, Louisiana, the birthplace of jazz, with none other than the man who played with Louis Armstrong. He played with Jelly Roll Morton, and he is known to be one of the best pre-big band drummers that there was. His name is Baby Dodds. Many of you may not have heard of him. Now, the deal with Baby Dodds, he was one of the first recorded drummers that was ever recorded improvising. I know that sounds like not a big deal to us, but back then, you didn't really improvise within the music. Now, the contribution that he made that's so important is related to what they would call his shimmy beat. Now, at the time, drummers were playing a type of a buzz roll on 2 and 4, so it'd be a bap, bap, except it was a very short buzz roll. And what he did was a very simple thing. He extended that buzz roll to where it almost overlapped with the 1 and the 3. So, bop, zzz, 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 zzz.
and shame it be.
Yeah. Oh, not with the color of the. Yeah.
No, but listen, I'm the only one doing it. Yeah. That's how it works.
Now, what this led to later was what we now know as the common jazz ride cymbal pattern. Ching, 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 that thing came from Baby Dots. This was in the early days of the drum sets. There weren't a lot of cymbals around. Sometimes there would be one attached to the bass drum. And Baby Dots is actually somewhat responsible for the first sock cymbal or hi-hat cymbal. They used to be very, very low to the ground. They were called sock cymbals. So the story goes that William Ludwig came to see Baby Dots playing on a steamboat. I believe it was in St. Louis. And you notice that Dodge was balancing his foot. So he asked him, he said, hey, can you do that with your toe instead of your heel? And Dodge said, well, I think so. So Ludwig went away, came back later with the first prototype of what would be the sock symbol. He gave it to Dodge. Turns out Dodge hated the sock symbol, but he had just taken the symbol off of his bass drum because he couldn't stand the tinny sound. So he, in general, didn't like using those symbols. He felt it interrupted the flow of his beats, his shimmy beats, and his buzz rolls. You may also hear the term press roll. That really means the same thing as a buzz roll. Press roll, buzz roll are interchangeable. The album to check him out on, or one that I like.
Well, now we've had an opportunity to listen to a gentleman who is actually Stephen Taylor talking about the first forms of, I guess it's the first form of jazz, and the person who was responsible for that particular thing called the drum in the midst of all of that. I think that the person who, I believe, is like you said, Baby Dots, and we're going to see if we can pull something up so you can actually hear Baby Dots play and what they call the shimmy. Let's take a listen, and then we'll come back. This is short.
We call it shimmy beat.
Yeah. Oh, now they call it a.
No, but listen, I'm the only one doing it. Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But there's still time, very hard to do this press roll. But they use it different. They do. No. That's wrong. They don't.
Now, Kid Webb suffered from something called tuberculosis of the spine. He suffered a fall down some stairs when he was a child, and this made him somewhat short as well as hunchbacked when he got older. He was one of the best-known drummers and band leaders of the new swing era. He directly influenced both Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich. Buddy Rich actually said he's the daddy of them all. He also introduced a young Ella Fitzgerald in her teens to the world through his band. He was a huge influence to many later jazz drummers. Both Art Blakey and Duke Ellington were quoted as saying that he was a massive influence both in their band leading, their composing, their sound. Now, the thing you need to know about Chick Webb and Baby Dodds and drummers of that time is they don't always translate so great on recording, because the recording techniques and instruments they had at the time were not really great for picking up the dynamic range that the drums were producing. A good album to check him out on is Ella Sings, Chick Swings.
So, we had an opportunity to listen to Baby. Let's see if I can pull up something now that allows us to hear more about this great drummer who actually spent a lot of time with Ella Fitzgerald. Actually, he was her mentor. Let's listen to Chick Webb. Let me see if I can tell you some things about. Well, let's just go ahead and listen to him first. This is a song that he recorded, My Wild Irish Rose, May 4th, 1939.
My Wild Irish Rose, featuring Chick Webb at the drums.
His orchestra. back in 1939. That was being during the time when actually Ella Fitzgerald had just joined his orchestra. I didn't choose anything that she sang. Most often she sang songs with that gave it the impression that she was very young, and she was. She was only 17 years old when she started performing with Chick Webb. And I like to go back to the person who's talking now about drummers and let him tell you some more about at least two more drummers, and we'll follow up after that next week with some additional drummers. Here we go.
We'll consider this next one the world's greatest drummer. You'll hear that term multiple times throughout this. Players referring to other players, what the general population thinks. And it goes to show you there's no consensus here. There's no world's greatest drummer. So the next in the lineup is Gene Krupa. Now, Gene Krupa's contribution to the drumming, the drum set, the art form is immeasurable, not only in his playing, but also the revolutions that he helped and improvements he helped to bring about on the drum set. He was really the first rock star drummer, even though he was a jazz big band drummer. Now, he wasn't just influential in his playing, he was also influential in how he helped bring the drum set along. He collaborated directly as Klinghorn's first endorsed artist to make the first tunable tom-tom. In addition to that, he was collaborating directly with Armand Zildjian. The cymbals at the time were very, very thick. They were orchestral cymbals, and they really didn't translate well for the drumming that was going on in that style. So he really helped bring about and standardize that thinner cymbal that we know today. As well, he was the first drummer, if I'm getting this correct, to request a 16-inch crash cymbal on his left side. Up to that time, ride cymbals were like 14 inches and hi-hats were 12 inches and 10 inches and lower. So he was the first one to request that crash cymbal. He helped standardize many of the standard names for the cymbals, like the splash, the crash, the swish, the ride. So he not only was a huge contribution in the drumming department, he was also a huge contribution in just the modern drum set and how it looks. Around 1978, Gene Krupa was the first drummer inducted into the Modern Drummer Hall of Fame, and he's just continued to influence drummers throughout the years. An album to check him out on is Krupa Rocks, and then a song, obviously, that everyone knows by Gene Krupa, it would be the famous Sing, Sing, Sing.
We're going to stop right there, and I'm going to see if I can pull up something now that I will allow you to hear more of Gene Krupa playing. Here he is. Let's see what happens when it comes up. You know, Gene Krupa, here it is right now, stomping at the Savoy. Let's see what he sounds like. Thank you. People that he had in the recording that he put together called Stomping at the Savoy. We're going to go back and listen to a few more elements of what this gentleman has to say. I think the next person he talks about is none other than the great Buddy Rich. Let's see if I can find him. I don't think I got rid of him completely, did I? Did I get rid of him completely? Oh, wow, what a trip. But I do know that the next person he was going to talk about is Buddy Richards. So let's give a listen to one of the jazz drummers who I think modernized the sound of the drum and its influence on keeping the rhythm for all those playing both in the orchestra and in symphonies and as well as in jazz groups. That's this great man right here, Buddy Rich. Here he is right now with Boston Pops in 1981. Let's give a listen. Thank you.
That was Buddy Rich. And I can't say enough. I heard Buddy Rich play when I was about 12, 13 years old. Right? You know, and I heard Gene Krupa play when he played with Benny Goodwin. Of course, I'm not that old when they were doing it in the 30s, but I do remember them doing it in the 50s. And both of them were fantastic drummers. And you heard Buddy Rich just now playing at the Boston Pops. That was in 1981, almost 30 years ago. And we're going to listen to him play. That was with a symphonic orchestra. And this time we're going to listen to him play with a regular band, if I can pull it up. And it's good. Let's take a listen.
Do you mind if I play like this? Is that all right? Okay. I just want to get a drink of water, and then we'll... I'd like to do 1 o'clock jump and dedicated to the loving memory of Count Basie, okay?
Thank you.
That was the great Buddy Rich. I remember him doing something in the band that Frank Sinatra put together to do some music that he was recording. And I think Sinatra could never say enough about Buddy Rich's ability to fit right into any given type of situation. And that's one reason why I felt it was important that we at least stop at this particular moment on the drums for this week. Probably next Friday, I will be back in the saddle, being able to articulate, planning on having a tooth or two removed out of my head. And therefore, Monday's show will not be, I will not be able to do anything on Monday night for the show on Monday. But I will be back on Friday, God willing, and creek don't rise. I wanted to... The very first song that you heard, I never did tell you who those two active, very fantastic musicians were, and they were ladies, Althea Rennie and Jeanette Harris, one playing the drum, the saxophone, and the other one playing the flute. That's called an album. It's called We Are One. And it's had 497,000 hits on the computer, and it was actually collaborated from the popular song by Frankie Beverly song. You know, everybody should know who Frankie Beverly is. In any event, I thought it was appropriate for you to hear these two fantastic ladies play at the very beginning of the show. Now we're going to move on to a lady who is no longer with us, just passed on, maybe a month and a half or so ago, who I thought was a beautiful woman when she performed as well as act. She was a fantastic singer, sang very, very, very similar to the kind of singing that Sinatra did, except that she was the female element of this. And I'm speaking of Doris Day. This is a song she recorded. a long time ago called The Way We Were.
Light the corner of my mind, misty colored memories of the way we were. Scattered pictures of the smiles we left behind, smiles we gave to one another for the way we were. Can it be that it was all every line? If we had the chance to do it all again, tell me, would we? Could we remember our two views happening again? What's too painful to remember? We simply choose to forget. So it's the last word we will remember.
The thing about it is I'm going to be doing some other stuff by individuals, and I hate to not pay proper homage to a very tremendously gifted singer, as was Doris Day. She doesn't receive credit for her ability to translate music to other people, but she was really fantastic with it. Like I said, very similar in her presentation of telling the story as was Frank Sinatra. And therefore, I'm going to make sure we hear something else about her today. And next week, I will even make sure she is included in one of the things that we do. And this is Doris Day and the information that was passed on by the BBC.
Keep the focus on the United States because the Hollywood icon Doris Day has passed away. She died at the age of 97. Now, of course, as an actress, she starred in some really famous films like Calamity Jane, but she also recorded more than 650 songs. This made her one of the most popular and one of the most acclaimed singers of the 20th century. Well, this sad news came via the website of her foundation, the Doris Day Animal Foundation, and it says that Doris had been in excellent physical health for her age until recently contracting a serious case of pneumonia, and it added that she was surrounded by a few close friends as she passed. Tributes, of course, have been pouring in. William Shatner of Star Trek fame talking, passing on his condolences and describing her as, I think most people would recognize her, the world's sweetheart, beloved by all. Que sera, sera, of course, her famous song. David Filippo looks back at Doris's career, which started back in the 1930s.
Doris Day, cracking that whip in Calamity Jane. No one captures better good-natured 50s Hollywood innocence. Her romantic comedies were smart, glamorous box office hits. Pillow talk with Rock Hudson won her an Oscar nomination.
You ain't the kind of gal to break a date.
No, I'm not.
And I ain't the kind of guy that'd ask you to.
I had a great time, and I think that they sensed it. They had fun. And wear all the gorgeous clothes and work with Rock Hudson and Jimmy Garner and Clark Gable, you know. I mean, how bad can it be?
As a child, the young Mary von Kappelhoff wanted to be a dancer, but a car accident ended that dream. She then discovered she could sing. In the late 40s, with her new stage name Doris Day, she was one of the highest paid singers in the business. The film Romance on the High Seas was her first screen role, and despite almost no acting experience, the star quality was immediately obvious.
Doris Day, star of the new film.
She went on to become the highest paid actress in Hollywood. In public, she was platinum grade, all American good cheer.
Gonna take a sentimental journey.
But in private, it was a rather different story.
You can't tell me what to do.
This movie with Jimmy Cagney was perhaps a closer reflection of the first of her four marriages. Her move into TV was a consequence of her third husband leaving her virtually bankrupt. Fashions had changed. Her movie career was over. And then in 1985, a reunion, a TV interview with Rock Hudson. A few months later, he had died from AIDS. Show business was now, for Doris Day, over. Her life, her animal foundation. There was an album of unreleased songs that made her a chart topper at 89. However, her wishes are no memorial, no funeral, no grave marker. However, we'll always have the films.
Que sera, sera. What will be,
remembering Doris Day. I want to return to one of our main stories, and it's actually the sad news that Doris Day, a Hollywood icon, has passed away. She was 97 years old, and tributes have been pouring in for the actress and the singer. One of the many, many tributes is from Stella McCartney, saying, "The one, the only, the woman who inspired so much of what I do." She ends it by saying, "Doris Day, I love you, my Calamity Jane." Of course, Calamity Jane, one of the most famous, one of those really famous films that Doris was in. Goldie Hawn, also another really well popular actress, saying, "Great Doris Day left us and took a piece of the sun with her. She brightened our lives and lived out her life with dignity." So I think let's leave you now with some of Doris Day's songs that are so loved in tribute of her. She has, of course, passed away at the age of 97.
No, I shouted from the highest hill. Even so, the golden day.
For more than two decades, Doris Day stood as perhaps the most glamorous icon of the American dream, both beautiful and homely in a way that struck a chord with her millions of fans. Her songs and films earned her worldwide fame. Her all-American image fell out of favor in the so-called permissive age of the late 1960s, but tonight, after her death at the age of 97, the tributes pouring in show that her style stood the test of time.
Whatever will be
With her golden voice, glowing smile, and girl next door image, Doris Day became one of Hollywood's greatest stars.
Our lips shouldn't touch, darling.
And one of the world's most bankable ones.
With T for two.
Rising to fame in the 50s and 60s, her fresh face standing for a time of innocence. Her lilting voice catapulted her to stardom as a crooner, but her all-American charm made her a leading lady and the golden girl of Hollywood's golden age.
Whip crack away.
Appearing in 39 films over two decades, she was a star in her own right. But her partnership with actor Rock Hudson made the pair a box office draw.
Hello. Is anybody on this line?
Yes, I am on the line. Would you please get off it?
But her life was not always as funny as her movie roles. Her four marriages were marred by physical and emotional abuse. And as the sexual revolution of the 1960s stormed Hollywood, she went out of fashion, and critics began poking fun at her wholesome image. In later years, she became intensely private, making a rare appearance in 1989 to pick up a Golden Globe.
And it's been a wonderful life, and I'm not finished yet. I think the best is yet to come.
She resurfaced again on her 90th birthday. She had become a strong animal rights activist.
We love you, Doris. It's magic.
Her foundation today said she died at her California home after contracting pneumonia. But her legacy will live on as America's silver screen sweetheart.
Yes, I couldn't let it go by without paying homage to a woman that I thought was really a great, great singer. And in terms of her acting, the Young at Heart movie that she did with Frank Sinatra, to me, is a masterpiece. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to move on, and we're going to, this time, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the gentleman whose album, it has sold more albums in jazz than any other album. In the million, in the billions of albums that have been sold. It was recorded in 1959. And to tell you a lot about it, it's sort of interesting because these are some thoughts that were gendered by none other than the great Miles Davis from his album called Kind of Blue. Man was a genius, and everybody who played with him were geniuses also. I'm speaking of none other than why don't we do this? Why don't I just play you one a cut and just come back? Let's see if we can deal with Kind of Blue itself, the song. And you'll see how he set the tone for the remaining of time we have right now in most of our songs that we deal with when it comes to smooth jazz. None other than the great Miles Davis Quintet. Well, whether you believe this or not, I have something on here that said that the video is unavailable. So that old album that I had planned for us to hear, and I was looking forward to myself, is no longer available. But I tell you what is available, some music by Miles Davis, And let me tell you, on the piano he had Bill Evans, was Coltrane was on the tenor sax, and Cannonball Adderley was on the alto sax. But what we're going to do is I'm going to find something else that Miles Davis did, so you can hear the great genius that he possessed. And this one right here is something that he did called Love for Sale. And in it, he had two other performers, Cannonball Adderley, as well as Coltrane, John Coltrane. Everybody called him just Train. And on the piano, on the bass, Paul Chambers. Let's just take a listen.
Thank you. Thank you.
More smoother can you get? That was Miles Davis on Green Dolphin Street with some great people playing with him. Gil Evans again on the piano and on bass, Paul Chambers. I think Gil Evans was playing the piano. Yes, I said that. And Coltrane, tenor sax, and Cannonball Adderley. And this is in 1958. It was recorded in 1958. And I'm going to see if I can go back and see what else I had scheduled for you that we didn't get a chance to hear. But while I'm doing that, let me tell you a little bit about the great people that played with Miles Davis. I just wonder what it must have felt like when Miles was playing. What did it feel like when he was playing with Cannonball Adderley, who actually is a person who actually sounds so much like Charlie Parker. And Charlie Parker was the person who actually brought Miles Davis along. And in fact, they were roommates at one time. So, but I'm not going to stay and talk. I don't have that much time left. We got about 2 minutes left in the show. And I'm going to give you a person called Huge Groove. And we may not get a chance to hear it all, but if we don't, you have a nice weekend.